You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to episode 41 of the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, October 15th, 2008. I'm Martin Spriggs.
And I'm Sally Draper.
And we are your hosts for a weekly conversation about things that we hope will have some impact on your ministry. Welcome, everybody, and welcome, Sally.
Hi, Martin. How are you today?
I'm okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to a special rendezvous with some of my favorite Wells Tech listeners. My parents' 60th wedding anniversary is next week, and we're heading to Branson to have a family reunion. Very excited about that.
Cool. That's a neat place.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Heard you've been feeling under the weather lately. Hope that things are going to go. Are you under medication?
I need medicine. No, I think I'm gonna live. We're gonna survive it. The Drapers have had a run of the stomach flu, and It just hasn't been fun around here. But we're bouncing back.
Okay. Well, if I hear a long pause or silence, I'll just keep going.
Good idea.
All right. Well, let's get right to it. We wanted to talk about e-newsletters. We've got an interview coming up with Wells Director of Communications Joel Hochmuth and Project Leader Alicia Newman talking about the Together newsletter, and we touch a little bit on how churches, and I suppose schools too, could use electronic newsletters perhaps as a replacement for or an enhancement to the traditional paper newsletters. And almost every church has a newsletter. I assume you do, Sally?
Oh, yes. We have a Sleepy monthly Eye newsletter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Big production for a lot of congregations, a lot of paper, especially for, obviously, larger congregations. Takes a while. You need volunteers. You need somebody to collect all that content, to write it, to reproduce it, to mail it. You know, so a lot of costs there.
Absolutely. A lot of time investment as well. Mm-hmm. And besides a monthly newsletter, we do a school weekly newsletter, which has those same repercussions. There's lots of paper and lots of time involved in getting those out as well.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about perhaps going electronic with the newsletter. I think you've got a couple of options when you're talking about electronic newsletters. You can essentially do the same paper copy, but PDF it, in essence, you know, make it an electronic, put it in an electronic format that most people can read, obviously that have computers, and it essentially is emailed to them as an attachment, or you publish it on your website and send an email out to those people who would like to receive that with a link to that particular PDF newsletter. And there the formatting is the same, and it's just another way to eliminate the kind of the paper process.
Right. That's a pretty easy solution, Martin, and one that everyone should consider whether you want to go electronic or not. It's great to have your newsletter on your website so mm-hmm. that people that visit your website can get that news as well.
Right. And then an alternative strategy would be to kind of build more of a website, essentially, that gets emailed. And that can be done with HTML-type email messages that essentially have all the articles, but maybe just in bullet format or just kind of a teaser with links back to your web-based version of the newsletter. And there are probably some advantages there, too, so that people can kind of zero in on those things that are of interest to them, and they're more likely to scan all of those bullet items and see what's going on within the church rather than page through, let's say, 8 or 10 pages of newsletter.
Right. That's actually what we're doing with the Together newsletter that we're going to talk to Joel and Alicia about later on. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a very successful model. So if someone's curious about how that works, hopefully you're subscribed to Together, mm-hmm. and you'll see an example of that twice a month when you receive those. So there is a lead article that's published in full. It's the article from the president. And then there's just maybe two or three sentences from each of the other articles and a link back to the Wells.net website where we have the full article published.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Let's take a step back and just talk about the creation of a newsletter. And I suppose this would apply to whether it be online or in paper. Some of the same concepts apply. A great website that I've done a little surfing on that I've found some useful information on is a website called newsletterwritingtips.com. That's www.newsletterwritingtips.com. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. They've got a number of articles. It's a website that's kept fairly up to date, but they include articles like how to write a teacher newsletter or how to write a PTA newsletter or a Christmas newsletter. One article that I found pretty interesting was 5 surefire ways to annoy people with your email newsletter. So let me read you those 5 things. I thought they were kind of interesting. When you're composing your newsletter in your email browser, put everyone's email address in the to field so that when someone receives your mailing, they can see everyone else's address. We've talked about this before, mm-hmm. Sally, right?
That's right. You want a blind carbon copy, folks, so that you protect their email addresses from being shared with those they don't want it to be shared with.
Mm-hmm. You've got a number of ways to do that. As most email clients have that BCC. Also, if you're using products like Shepherd Staff, there's a little checkbox that you can select that will force that email to be BCC'd, blind carbon copied, versus broadcasting your entire congregational email list to everybody else. Not a good strategy. Number 2, don't give your reader a way to unsubscribe or ignore them when they ask that you stop contacting them.
That's a big thing that you need to watch out for. People need to have control of what email they receive. So if they don't want it, you have to give them a way to opt out.
Absolutely. The last thing that you want your newsletter to be tagged with is that spam, this is spam by your own members saying, I don't want this anymore, and not give them a way to stop receiving this. So obviously you want them to enjoy reading, and that goes back into creating good content. But give them a way to unsubscribe, or at least if they send an email, say, don't send this anymore, have a way to take them off the list and keep them there. Number 3, when you meet someone new or chat with them about your business or weather or church or whatever, or if they contact you about something unrelated, be sure and immediately add them to your mailing list. Don't get explicit permission or let them know you've done it.
No, that's not a good thing either, is it? You want to make sure that you have their permission, that they have an interest there, that you're not going to just surprise them with something that they're not really interested in.
Great way to grow your list, but probably not the best way to curry favor with the recipients of what you're trying to send. So make sure they're on board with that. Number 4, be sure not to check your links in your newsletter. That way people will be annoyed and frustrated when they click and wind up at an error page. That's just kind of common sense to make sure you proofread, but obviously there's a different dynamic or component when you're putting together an e-newsletter. So make sure it all works. Obviously you can read a typo, but click on those links, make sure they're going to the appropriate place on your site. So that's an important one. And then finally, dress up your promotion as a newsletter. So in essence, you're basically not sending a newsletter, you're sending an ad. And I think that's a common pitfall for churches, where article after article after article are things like, sign up for this, or we need help doing that, et cetera, et cetera. There can be some of that, but I think you need to have a mix, don't you, Sally?
Right. feeding them the word, you know, is always an underlying message of your newsletter and your church, I'm sure.
Yep. Needs to be value, and there needs to be what I would call a value exchange. In order for them to read your newsletter, you've got to give them something of value to read. Not just requests or marketing or promotion, but some good stuff that they're going to look forward to each newsletter for. So I thought that list was pretty effective. Check that site out. I think it's got some good stuff. Let's talk a little bit about design then. We've talked about, you know, some of the do's and don'ts of, you know, putting this together. What things should people consider when they're thinking about designing a newsletter?
Well, web design is a challenge because of the variety of machines and browsers that people will see things in. And for e-newsletters, for email, the additional aspect of whether they can actually view HTML versus just plain text in their email. Right. So there's a lot of variables there that you have to take into account. And I guess the best thing to do is to do a lot of testing, to try it out on as many different systems as you can, email it to people that are on different types of computers using different email clients and things like that, so that you have a good sampling of what it's going to look like to the audience you're trying to address.
If anybody's ever looked at the Together newsletter, if you're on that subscription list, you can click on a link and you'll be taken to a website that is essentially a web page that is the newsletter. And if you're doing the same thing, some of the things obviously that you need to be concerned with are some of the same things that you'd have to be concerned with when you're developing a website, which is actually what we're going to talk about next week. You have to be concerned with the screen resolutions, and you have to be concerned with how different web browsers render the content. So do some checking. The resolution that we work with at the Synod here these days is constantly expanding. We used to dumb it down to very low resolutions because we felt that most people or a majority of people had lower resolution screens. That's not the case anymore. So I think you can design for larger screen resolutions. We use 1024 by 768 at this point, which we're finding, at least from our weblogs, that most people are at. And that gives you a lot more possibilities. So you've got more screen real estate to play with. And then obviously check for the three major browsers at this point. Internet Explorer, Firefox, and Safari would be the three big ones, as much as you can.
I think one of the things, Martin, to keep in mind there when you're displaying your newsletter, either in email or on the web, is what's what they call above the fold. What's the first thing that people are going to see that's going to fill their screen? Mm-hmm. And you want your most important content to be there. So your headlines and maybe a sidebar with some important links or whatever, so that in the top of the screen, what they see first, they're seeing the most important message you're trying to convey.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's some tips when you're designing web-based newsletters. Let's jump back into the PDF world for a second, because I think that's where a lot of our congregations are headed or already at when they're thinking of e-newsletters or creating a PDF. There are some tools out there that obviously are available to do that. A lot of them are kind of built in. Let's talk about some of the PDF creation type softwares that are out there, Sally.
Well, you're right that a lot of them are built in. The new version of Microsoft Word has a free plugin that you can download.
That's right. Works pretty
and
well.
And also OpenOffice.org, a free office suite, has PDF creation built right into the software. So in either case, it's really just an icon on your toolbar that you click, and it'll ask you to give the PDF file a name, and your PDF file will be created. Mm-hmm. If you don't have those two software, if you want to create PDF versions of other items on your desktop, you can use a couple of different PDF softwares that function like a printer driver. One is Cute PDF and one is PDF Fill. And both of these, you go into your print menu and select to print to either Cute PDF or PDF Fill, and it'll prompt you again for a file name for your PDF document and save it on your computer. So really easy to use options for creating PDFs. It used to be a lot more difficult to actually create PDFs, but now it's all real integrated with the software.
Yep. One of the gotchas, though, when you're creating PDF files is watch the file size. Regardless of whether you're attaching it in the email or posting it on your website and emailing a link, it's really easy to bloat your PDFs with a lot of graphics that have not been optimized, a lot of, you know, fonts, et cetera, et cetera. And most of these tools allow you to optimize your PDF file. I would say in general you want to try and keep your PDFs, what, under a meg, Sally, you think?
Certainly. I think that's very reasonable for people to deal with now.
Yep. And I would encourage you to, as much as possible, post your PDFs on your website rather than attaching them to an email. First of all, I think you're saving some bandwidth, but you're also suggesting people visit your website, and that's a good thing. You want to find ways to attract people to your website, because your newsletter, let's face it, is only going to come out in the case of a church probably once a month, in a school once a week. Why not get people used to going to your website where they can be updated much more often? Think about those things when you're posting PDF files. Watch the size. And also, if you're doing that, make sure that you're also providing a link to a free downloadable reader at Adobe. Again, these are real easy to grab. They're pretty small downloads, but you have to assume that there are going to be some people out there that don't have the PDF reading software, and you want to make sure it's as easy as possible for them to grab it. Let's talk a little bit then, Sally, about what tools are available to create newsletters. I know this is a question we often get. One of the tools that is used, I think, by a lot of churches, of course, is Microsoft Word. We should probably talk a little bit about the difference between a word processing program and a desktop publishing program. Word and WordPerfect and even OpenOffice, I think they call it text or write.
Writer, right,
are word processing programs. And essentially they are programs that you open and you begin to type. And when you reach the end of a page, it goes on to the next page and the next page and the next page. So it's optimized for text-type documents, although a lot of churches use Word to try and build their newsletters. And I think some do it effectively, but I think there are other better tools that you might be able to use to get better control, more granular control of the look and the feel of your page. And those would be the desktop publishing-type applications, which are really page-based rather than document-based. So you're working on a page at a time. And there's a couple online, and there's a couple that are downloadable. One of them, Sally, you've uncovered is Scribus.
Scribus, that's right. I'm looking at the web address right now. It's at scribus.net, and that's a free open source desktop publishing application. Very high-end, robust tools are included in Scribus, so you can do quite a bit with it, but the price tag is perfect because of the open source nature of it. Mm-hmm. You can get it for free, so we'll make sure and include a link to that. Another that's very commonly used is in the Microsoft family, and that's Microsoft Publisher.
Exactly.
And you're going to find Scribus to be real parallel to Microsoft Publisher.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to go a little bit higher end, and I would suggest that congregations that do a lot of newsletters or want to kind of up the bar a little bit and have even better control, and maybe even support a lot of these features built in as far as creating electronic newsletters on the fly or creating something that could be professionally printed. There's really only two players in this space. One from Adobe called InDesign. That's part of the CS3 now. I guess we're up to CS4 suite. That's what most design shops use, in addition to Quark Express by Quark Software. That's Quark. They work very similarly to Publisher. They have some higher-end features, but those would be something that you would want to check out. Typically, schools can get those at a very good price as far as educational discounts are concerned. And I think in some cases, charity discounts apply too for churches. So those would be two products that you'd want to check out if you're looking to kind of take that next step up from Publisher. So maybe we should remind our folks about the distribution conversation we had a number of episodes now, Sally, about how to leverage some tools out there that can get your newsletter to people via email.
Right. That was episode 26 back on July 2nd. And a couple of links there might be really useful. One is constantcontact.com and the other is icontact.com. And both of those are web-based tools that allow you to build your e-newsletter there on their website, Web 2.0 technology in place. So you end up with a really professional look to your email and very easy to put in place. There may be some fees based with those, but check them out and see if they might work for you.
Great. So with that, why don't we jump into the interview that we've been previewing here kind of through our conversation, and that's a discussion with Joel and Alicia here in Wells Communication Services about the rather recent launch of the Together newsletter and how successful that has been and why. Let's listen to our conversation with Joel and Alicia. We're happy to have joining us today Wells Director of Communications, Joel Hochmuth, and Communications Project Manager, or Wells Communication Project Manager, Alicia Newman. Thanks for joining us, you guys.
Glad to be here.
We wanted to talk with you today about the Together newsletter and e-newsletters in general. Together is kind of a new concept within Wells and I think well-received, and you guys are the people behind making all that happen, certainly on the content side. So we really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us about that. First of all, maybe Joel or Alicia, can you tell us a little bit about what you guys do in addition to kind of being the nuts and bolts behind Together, for Wells Communication Services?
Well, I think we're trying to figure that out as we go, I think. But what we're trying to do is manage the whole communication pie, really. So, and Together is just really a piece of that. And then, most people are going to be familiar with Ford and Christ magazine, as well as our, website and many of the other pieces that we've got. So it's a multifaceted approach, and trying to keep about three or four different balls in the air all at once is... It can be tricky, and trying to manage it all, Wells Connection, the video presentation everybody's familiar with. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of those things, try to coordinate them so that the messaging stays the same throughout.
Mm-hmm. And your background is in the broadcast industry, journalism, and for CNN, right?
Right. My professional background really stems all the way back 20 years ago when I started at CNN, so
mm-hmm.
Wore a number of different hats there, so.
All right. Now you're really in the big time, though, in the world,
right?
How about you, Alicia? What do you find yourself doing day-to-day at the Wells?
I do a lot of writing and editing. I help a lot with Ford and Christ, work on Mission Connection. That's a quarterly publication that goes out mm-hmm. to all congregations. Kind of other tasks as assigned.
Oh, sure.
and I drive her crazy now. What do you want me to do now? I was doing something else. Now you're changing directions on me.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about Together. First of all, maybe for those of our listeners who don't know what Together is, maybe a quick explanation of what is Together.
Well, Together is a biweekly electronic newsletter that we send out to all cult workers, all congregations, and a growing list of lay subscribers. We're still working on that aspect of it, trying to increase readership among our lay people out there. But it really came out of. Well, I guess we started up pretty quickly after the convention last year, 2007 convention, Synod convention, and President Schrader and I kind of sat down and one day after convention, and we were getting acquainted, and we both realized at the same time that we have got to find a way to improve communication to all of our constituents and all of our congregations, called workers, et cetera. And I think that flowed out of the understanding, for years, Forward in Christ has been the standard communication piece within Wells, and understandably so. But in this day of immediate communication, there are just certain limitations with Forward in Christ in that, the lead time is months. And so
right.
By the time something happens and it appears in Forward in Christ, it's months down the road. We had up until that point a way of delivering news through our news, electronic news releases, but it was sporadic. We didn't really have a real, good handle as to when you sent out one and what news qualified as a news release, that sort of thing. And so news coming from Synod up until that point had been very sporadic. And what we realized was we needed a regular timely way of delivering developments across Synod to Synod as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Alicia, you're responsible for some of the digging to find some of the content. How has that gone? Is it easy to kind of populate? This is like twice. This is twice a month, right? Or every 2 weeks, right?
Right. Okay. Can we be honest?
Yeah.
Please.
Realistically, I clear my whole week. The whole week before Together is sent out mm-hmm. to do the digging. Joel and I usually meet a week before it goes out to discuss content, story leads. Then it's a matter of following up to see if those stories are actually a go, doing the interviews, writing the copy, sending it around for approvals, and then the work begins of actually putting the newsletter together. So it's a pretty big production. Keeps us on our toes.
I think one thing that you find is that I don't think as administrators necessarily here in the Senate Administration Building, I don't think we're all necessarily geared to saying, oh, you know what, I think other people should know about this. Mm-hmm. So that's been a process in itself, which is just trying to get everybody wired into thinking, you know what, I should probably be letting somebody else know about this. And that in itself is a process.
Doesn't happen by itself.
No, it doesn't always happen naturally. And that's why a big part of our job is going knocking on doors and pulling things out of people.
Mm-hmm. And so what's been the reaction on the receiving end of Together? Have you gotten some feedback from those that you're addressing? Is it well received?
Yeah, the feedback has been dynamite, and I think that's one of the things that keeps us going, is because we get that feedback and we know that it's being well received. And in fact, in a lot of ways, there are a lot of people I think actually depending on it, because it has in its short year's lifespan at this point become really a sort of a vital piece as we judge it. And I don't think that's us tooting our own horn or anything. I think that's just really the objective feedback that we're getting back, because we have sent out a couple of surveys, just to see what's going on out there, how it's being received, how we can approve it, that sort of thing. And the feedback has all been universally positive. So that's a huge encouragement to us to know that we're on the right track anyway.
So with that positive feedback and the relative early success of it, is there a kind of a phase two? What kind of wrinkles do you see kind of being added to it? Or is it, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, strategy at this point?
Well, I think, Alicia, did you see that one comment that we got, which was a real eye-opener, which was somebody, again, really complimenting us on the work, but saying something to the effect, don't get stale or something.
Yeah, the comment was something to the effect of, don't let the newness wear off, because that's what keeps the momentum going. Mm-hmm. So they recommended or suggested, keeping it fresh, so people will keep looking forward to getting that news every 2 weeks.
I think that the format itself probably won't change drastically, but I think what we think constantly is, how can we provide added value? In other words, every story has to take me somewhere else. What's the content that we can add to the story that's not in the particular presentation or the article that you're reading? Where can you go to learn more? Where can you get additional information? Where are there video resources or podcast or something that relates to this particular topic? And so that's what we're working on developing, which is all of that additional content that adds value to what's in the electronic newsletter itself.
Yeah, I would think the multimedia concept is going to probably become more and more prominent with all our communications, whether it be Together or whatever, that, there's just more and more video being created, more and more audio that your audience is expecting to see and hear.
One feature that we have on there, and every edition has, for instance, Spotlight on Streams, mm-hmm. in which we're spotlighting some, either it's a video resource or an audio resource or whatever it happens to be. And we have noticed that, based on the impact that Together is having, that those particular resources always get a spike in their usage mm-hmm. when they're spotlighted there. In other words, it's highlighting some of these other things that we're doing. And I think that's a good thing.
Very good.
Absolutely. I was going to kind of shift gears a little bit, guys, and focus on the technical aspects of an e-newsletter.
All right, now you're out of my league.
Since our audience is kind of techie, I know that one thing that we've heard is people looking for ways to improve their communication within their own congregation. And Martin, you and I focused one of our discussion points on this back in episode 26 of Wells Tech, just mass email communication, that kind of thing. I wonder if you guys have gotten any requests for those kind of things, and if together as a model maybe that congregations could look at for their internal communications.
We've had maybe 4 or 5 people just within the last few weeks that have been emailing us and saying, we really like the format of together. How could we do something similar with our own church? You know, maybe they've just been sending a mass email to, you know, just no graphics or anything, maybe text only, and and they just really appreciate the way it's set up, and they've just been curious about the different e-newsletter software out there.
Right.
So
you've been providing them some helpful tips, and you know, a process that we use, which is pretty custom. Mm-hmm. You know, we recognize that, you know, we had some unique needs, and some of the off the shelf stuff, you know, didn't work as well for us within our existing environment. Now that may change as we go forward, but you know, so it's kind of hard to replicate to some degree. But there are tools, and if you go back to that episode that Sally referenced, and we'll put that in the show notes, there are tools out there that may meet the needs of a congregation. And I think the general encouragement to our congregations is try it. You know, there are, you know, huge benefits to doing good internal communications, right?
Yeah, although I would have one piece of advice would be to really think through what kind of content you want on there. I know from experience from a local congregation, when you get your, because local congregations tend to, I think in smaller congregations, the application is not as obvious, because, like, for instance, when I got a newsletter, I go, oh, I knew all this stuff already. There was never anything new in the newsletter. So you have to sort of think through, you know, what is that content going to be? What are we going to deliver that they're not getting somewhere else?
And that's a personnel issue, right? You know, people with time and skill sets necessary to craft that, to put that together, get that information out.
Yeah, and I think on the synodical level, I think there's a more obvious need for something like this, just because we're so dispersed and we're, you know, all over the country, and we don't necessarily know what's going on in other parts of the country. And I think one of the biggest compliments I think I saw in one of our, you know, feedback that we were getting on together was just the fact that, you know, I feel connected again, which is exactly what we're trying to do. Now, I don't know, for instance, in a local congregation where, you know, that connection usually happens on a Sunday morning. You know, people come together, they congregate, they get to see each other, catch up with each other that they haven't seen all week long. And so that's generally where that happens. So that's why I get back to, if you're going to start one of these, really think through what's the content and what's missing. What aren't we able to provide through other means?
So what the objective is. Right. You know, why are you doing this? Why are you putting this energy and effort into it if it's just a regurgitation of the Sunday bulletin? Yeah, which doesn't make a lot of sense, right? Okay. Back to together. How do people, if they're not subscribed already, how do they do that?
Well, if you go to together.wells.net, you can view all the issues. There's an archive. There's also a place to subscribe there. You just enter your email and a password, and you can manage your account options there once you've set up your account. And then you get it in your email the first and third Mondays of each month. And it's set up really nice. Something people have said they really enjoy is that it's broken down, so there's just a brief synopsis of each story.
Right.
So when you're going through your email, you can just briefly glance over all the stories, click on what you want to read. It's a really user-friendly format. So definitely recommend subscribing.
Okay.
Well, what we've tried to do is provide a print edition for congregations that they can just run off and then put in their worship folders or whatever. But what we found is that there's just no real comparison between that print version and the electronic version. The electronic version is just so much, it's just so richer, because there's so much other content, there's so many other places you can go, whereas that print version is really kind of static, and it's you know, we're looking at that too as to how do we improve that, but it's that delivery mechanism is, you know, probably last century.
Right.
The electronic version is really where you want to be, because that's where you get the full advantage of all of the news and the links and everything else, all the other places it can take you.
Mm-hmm. How many people are subscribed at this point? How many people do receive this on a biweekly basis?
It goes to over 5,000 called workers.
Right.
And last time I checked, the lay subscribers were over 1,500. That number might have gone up. So it's definitely climbing.
Yeah. Although it's hard to track that, because the other thing that we found out from our last survey is that we have any number of pastors that are then forwarding it on to their congregation. We just don't have, we can't really track that. Yeah.
That's all gravy, right? Mm-hmm. So there are some stories that don't make it in Together, right? So is there a channel that they get communicated to the Synod folks?
One thing we've been doing a lot lately is coordinating material between all of our key publications. So, for example, if there's a story that we think would work for Together, sometimes there's an opportunity to kind of tell the continuing story or a different angle, either in Forward in Christ or Mission Connection, or sometimes there's a whole other aspect we can even feature on Wells Connection.
Okay.
So a lot of times if there's a story idea that comes in, we consider them for any of those publications. And then we also have some other ways of highlighting through the website. And
there's a bulletin board too, right?
Yes,
that gets put out. Okay. Mm-hmm. And how does that work? Is that a subscription kind of a thing as well, or what is that?
Well, currently we're just sending that to called workers, although in our grand scheme of things, we're thinking about ramping that up and making that available on a subscription basis as well.
Mm-hmm.
We really sort of tried to provide that as an outlet for everything that didn't really fit in Together.
Right.
In fact, many of those announcements of new resources or events or those sorts of things that are coming from the areas of ministry, we wanted to provide an outlet for that. As opposed to the old system in which everybody just sent out an email to everybody. We're trying to consolidate all of those things, all of those announcements about events and new resources and that sort of thing. And so we're trying to consolidate that as much as possible. But we're thinking about ramping that up so that it's available to a wider audience than just strictly the cult workers.
Mm-hmm. Great. Sally, I've kind of watched this, how this has grown and how it started, this concept of an e-newsletter from the Synod. And it's not something that's totally new. We've done these kinds of things before, but I think the difference is, in this case, we've really refined the scope. We've made something visually appealing. We've made it easy for people to get news, and the news is relevant. I think Alicia does just a fantastic job at trying to find relevant content that those subscribers would like to read.
Very exciting to see, and something we do in our congregation is what they talked about, downloading the PDF version and including that in our weekly, or I guess every other week or whatever, in our church bulletin, so that all of the members are connected, not just the called workers who are automatically subscribed to it.
Exactly. Very good. So thanks to Joel and Alicia. We will hear the second part of that interview as we talk about a little bit of redesign work, a lot of redesign work that's going on Wells.net, and how that might apply also to your church or school as you're thinking about, do I redesign or not? So come back next week for part two. Let's do our picks of the week, shall we, Sally?
Sure. I have one that's just kind of a fun thing that I wanted to share with everyone. It's called Dabble Board, and you can get to it at dabbleboard.com. And basically, it's a Web 2.0 online drawing tool. It allows you to do charts and mark up things online. And what's cool about it is it's collaborative. So if I started a Dabble Board, Martin, I could email you a link to it. You could get online, and we could draw on our Dabble Board together.
Cool.
So we kind of open up the ability to communicate with pictures over the web. And that can be pretty powerful. I was thinking about, maybe a long-distance confirmation class or something like that. Having the ability to actually share drawings and things could be a real valuable tool.
Mm-hmm.
And that, again, is at dabbleboard.com. It's super easy to get started. There's a link for, you don't even have to have an account or anything. You just start drawing, basically. They have a lot of different, what would you call them, templated items where you can pull in images or like a flowchart diagrams and things like that. So if you need some different stamped tools to use with it, you can do that as well.
Mm-hmm. Very neat. Mm-hmm. I can think of a lot of applications, especially within the classroom context, too. So, mm-hmm. All right, my pick. We've been talking about newsletter design, and next week we're going to be talking about web page design or redesign. One of the challenges, I think, for the web designer, especially those that don't do that as a day-in and day-out profession, so the volunteer within the congregation who's maybe got some skills but doesn't do that for a living, is color. How do you pick colors for your website? How do you pick appropriate colors for the newsletter? And I would encourage everybody to use colors, because obviously it adds visual interest, and the whole point of creating a newsletter or a website is to get people to read them, so you want to make it visually appealing and compelling. This pick is from the Adobe website. It's called Color, and it's not spelled anywhere close to color. It's K-U-L-E-R. It's at kuler.adobe.com. And they've done, and there are other sites like this too, and I think we've maybe even referenced them in previous shows, but this one I think is really well done. Essentially, it allows you to pick a primary color, and then, or even upload an image. But if you pick a primary color, saying the color of our church color is red or blue or purple or go by season or however you want to do it, you plug that in, and ultimately you can pick what mood you'd like, whether it be colorful, bright, dark, deep, muted, whatever it is. Apply some rules. So I want it to be an analogous or a monochromatic look, or complementary colors, or compound colors, or shades of the same color. So you have all these settings, and ultimately you click a couple buttons, and it gives you about five or six colors that you would maybe that would make up your palette. So you'd pick from those colors and then would push those colors into your document or into your website. So they've done kind of the scientific work behind color matching, so that you know what are complementary colors, what are contrasting colors, what are in the same family, so that you don't just have to eye it up. You've got exact specifications, whether it be in a hex code that you could put right in a browser, RGB values, CMYK values. So if you're doing this in print, you can make sure that you're using colors that are going to go together that way. Just an invaluable resource if you're doing any kind of color selection. I can think of, as I mentioned before, you can upload an image. So let's say you upload your church logo, and you've got two or three colors in your church logo. It's going to read that logo and the colors in it and present a whole color palette that you can use for your newsletter. So your headlines can be in a particular color. Your text boxes can be surrounded. Your footer, however you want to do it, your masthead. Just a great selection tool for those who are who want to be a little bit more in tune with what colors they're using rather than just kind of guessing. And this is a lifesaver for me, because I'm terrible at doing that kind of stuff, and these kind of scientific tools really, really help you out.
I can put a plug in for color myself, Martin. I used it just this week in designing a new page that I was working on. And besides all the great things you said about it, I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, oh yeah.
it is so cool and so quick and easy to change it a million different ways and see all these possibilities with color schemes. Gets you really excited about web design.
Yep. Kind of makes you an instant expert, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't know a thing about color, you could probably even use it if you're painting your house and what trim should the color, what color should the trim be, et cetera. So pretty cool.
Lots of possibilities.
Yeah. So that's color, kuler.adobe.com. Give it a try. Our Wells.net feature of the week, Sally.
Sure. I wanted to give a quick shout-out to our Mission Connection website. Mission Connection is a quarterly publication, and it's actually a combination of Wells Home Missions and World Missions, along with Wells Kingdom Workers and LWMS articles. So a bunch of great people that are very mission-minded come together and share just wonderful resources. I love the Mission Connection because it's the hands-on articles, the real things that are going out on out there in our mission world. And what's neat about this website is that you can search the article archive back to 2004 for all those articles in the Mission Connection. It's got a very robust search engine. You can search it a lot of different ways. And so maybe you're having a mission festival come up or whatever, and you want to get some real hands-on kind of articles and things to go along with a particular area that you're interested in, this would be a great place to go and look for those articles. And I'll make sure to include a link in the show notes.
Yep. That's what we're about. That's one of the, you know, really the highlights of our Synod activity is what we're doing in these mission fields. And it's just a great resource that's available. Mm-hmm. Well, Sally, it's probably time in the show where we talk about our promo. Maybe it was 2 weeks ago, we put out a challenge, which was we would like to receive some voicemail feedback, and we received one last week, and we've got two more to play this week, asking people what digital devices do they use in their educational settings, whether it be Bible class or in the classroom. And we've got a couple comments that we'll play, and then following those comments, we're going to, you know, spin the wheel, as it were, and pick a winner. For the $15 gift certificate to the Wells Tech store, where you can buy some cool Wells Tech gear, whether it be a mouse pad mug, t-shirt, hat, all with the Wells Tech podcast logo on it. So some lucky winner will be potentially wearing a Wells Tech podcast t-shirt next week. So we've got two comments. We heard from Dan Numminson, who we've actually had on the show before, from Wisconsin Lutheran Child and Family Service. Let's take a listen to his voicemail.
Hey, Sally and Martin Sprague's Dan Numminson calling. Nice to hear from you guys again. Got your email regarding the question, what kind of digital devices do you use in your classroom or Bible class? And I have used Faith Stepping Stones before. With our congregation, and used sort of as a Bible class, I guess more of a seminar kind of a approach. But we use, you know, the Faith Stepping Stones curriculum uses PowerPoint, so we had laptop projector. There are flash songs embedded in the PowerPoint, so we needed speakers. We have an iPod, and we play some music while people are discussing things. So think. That is about it for that particular Bible class and seminar. So if you need any more information, let me know. 414-353-5005, extension 209. Love what you guys are doing. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Dan. He has found a way to, I think, use a lot of different technologies for a particular course called Faith Stepping Stones, which is an excellently done product by Wisconsin Lutheran Child and Family Service. Go to their website to find out a little bit more about what that production is all about. But I think it's important to touch all of the senses, and it sounds like that's what they're doing with Faith Stepping Stones.
Mm-hmm.
And then our second voicemail, or actually third, because we played one last week, is Ryan Rosenthal from Faith Fond du Lac. Let's listen to Ryan's voicemail.
Hi there, Wells Tech. This is Ryan Rosenthal calling from Faith in Fond du Lac regarding what digital devices do you use in your classroom or Bible class. First of all, I'd like to say good job getting Gail Prochatch to help you out. We need more Gail as much as possible. As far as what devices do we use, big thing would be the digital projectors up on the ceiling projecting everything, so much more of a visual for a lot of different things, including even just correcting things in class or doing various lessons, utilizing the information that comes with the textbook. They've got PowerPoints in every lessons already pre-made. Go through and use the PowerPoints as we're going through lessons is always a big plus. In the past, I've done art projects out of clay. Didn't want to waste the clay by letting it dry out, but also didn't want to print out all the pictures. So we took digital pictures, stored those digitally, and able to do a slideshow out of those to help out the class as well. Catechism class uses the projectors to go through the various PowerPoint slides as well. So pretty basic stuff right now, looking at trying to expand that a little more. Thanks to your inspiration, try to do assignments and things like that to get the parents more involved. Checking that sort of thing out as well. Also, after we get our internet connection up and running correctly, we want to try to do some of the music media also with them using Audacity, get them to do some different things with that as well. So pretty basic at this point, but trying to expand it as much as possible as time goes on and checking out Wells Tech Podcasts so we can do that. So thank you very much, and have a great day. Bye-bye.
And we thank you, Ryan, for your voicemail. More Gail. I second that. Gail is awesome. She adds a nice component to the show, and we'll get as much of Gail as Gail can provide. She does have a day job, I guess, as we do too, but that's great. Thanks for the comment, Ryan. Looks like he's also using a number of things, basically the traditional things, but it sounds like his eye is kind of on the future, looking for different ways to engage his students.
It's encouraging, and I think that's what we all need to be doing is just maybe taking in all these ideas and looking for ways that meet our needs and that fit with what we're doing in our individual ministries.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's why we do this show. Mm-hmm. All right, how are we going to do this, Sal? You have a magic 8-ball or some kind of number generator we can use?
I do. I've got it all set up. We're going to pick a number from 1 to 3 because we had 3 voicemail messages.
Okay, Alan Bunt is going to be number 1, Dan Numinson number 2, Ryan Rosenthal number 3. Go ahead and spin the wheel.
And the magic number is number 3.
And that's Ryan Rosenthal from Faith in Fond du Lac. So, Ryan, we will get that coupon information out to you via email. I think we've got his email address, do we not, Sally?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. If not, we'll hopefully have you call in. But that'll be on its way. So congratulations, and thank you to all 3 of you for being the first 3 voicemailers to the voicemail line. We appreciate that. We'd love to play more of you, all of you. So if you have different things that you'd like to contribute to the show, your ideas about future shows, comments on things that we've said in the past, or just a little chit-chat with us, that would be great. We'd love to hear from you. And the way to do that is, Sally, you got that number in front of you?
You can call us at 414-375-2334. And you can always reference our Wells Tech website at wellstech.wells.net for that phone number.
Very good. And we've been hearing from a lot of people in a lot of different ways, Sally. So we've got a pretty full community feedback bag today, don't we?
That's right. That's so exciting to hear from all the people across all the synods. So I want to start with a comment that we received from Jeff Clark. Jeff was actually following up on a show idea that Ryan Rosenthal sent us a week or two ago, where he suggested we look at PC maintenance type topics in one of our upcoming Wells Tech episodes. And Jeff added to that idea and said it might be a good idea to also talk about just hardware in general, learning about the different types of hardware. And he actually shared with us a PowerPoint that he had done for one of his classes where he did a speech on hardware types. So hopefully we can make use of some of that information that Jeff shared with us in a future episode.
Yep. Thanks, Jeff. Mm-hmm.
Next, we heard from Cindy Krieger. Cindy's written to us several times. She's in Lansing, Michigan, and works with the State of Michigan website. And she sent us an interesting link to a site about safe cloud computing. One of her coworkers is named Dan Lorman, and apparently he's one of the most respected security officers in the country, and he's in the process of publishing a book called Virtual Integrity, Faithfully Navigating the Brave New Web, and has an interesting article out there about cloud computing. So we'll include a link to that in our show notes as well.
Yeah, thanks, Cindy. I did read that article, and it sounds like he's going to be coming out with a book, too, that I'm interested in reading. But the article basically says, cloud computing is coming. It looks like it's going to become more and more the way that we work. But obviously, proceed with caution. As in anything, you recognize that there are security risks, and not all vendors are created equal, and you have to trust the people that you're entrusting your data to. So, mm-hmm. Great article.
Very good. Finally, I wanted to follow up on a couple of things from our last episode where we interviewed Andy Thimer about the LinkedIn in Wells group. We had an email from Andy thanking us for the interview and saying that 8 people had joined the group since the publication of the interview last week. So that was very exciting.
The power of the Wells Tech podcast.
Oh, wow. And
you know we have at least 8 listeners.
There you go. In addition, Danny Smith joined the In Wells group on LinkedIn, and he wrote a comment on LinkedIn that said, "Thanks for featuring Andy on your show. Otherwise, I would have never connected here. If anyone has not listened to Martin and Sally, you must." So,
gratuitous self-promotion. Yes, thanks.
There you go. So that's what we have for community feedback today.
Great. Thank you, Sally. Well, that's going to about do it. Let's talk a little bit about what's coming up next week. We've already referenced part 2 of the Joel Hochmuth and Alicia Newman interview, which we're going to enjoy. And along with that, we're going to have a conversation about the question, should you redesign your website? And if so, how do you do it? And there's a lot of different answers and a lot of different decisions that you need to make along the way. So tune in next week for a conversation about website redesign. And if you've got anything to add to that conversation, even before we have it, we'd love to hear that from you. So send us your emails, your voicemails, your links, however you want to do it. We'd love to hear about your thoughts on website redesign. Maybe you've just gone through it yourself and understand, you know, the pain and suffering that you might need to go through to do that, or how easy it was. So give us, let us know your experiences there. I'd love to hear from you. Let's close the show, as we always do, with a featured Wells artist, and it is the beautiful piano touch of Dawn Galhar, and she's going to be playing Precious Lord Take My Hand from her album Inspirations. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.